a public service announcement. Whiskey
This is 91.7 KOOP Austin Studio Time, 6:32. All right, this is the Liberated Space. All right, welcome gun owners and gender outlaws. You've re-entered an old space today, actually. One of my old and favorite pioneers of anarcho hell and punk rock anger, and an old friend from many super secret projects that we're not allowed to talk about, unfortunately, in this oppressive state. All right. And we can talk about Rebuild the Church, though, can we, Scott?
Oh, I don't care. Yeah, I'm down to talk about that if you want.
Yeah, all right. All right. Well, anyway, we have on with you today the one, the only, Scott Horton. Scott is making his radio comeback. Yeah.
Hi, everybody.
Okay, where and when? We're waiting with them, bated anticipation. Bated breath. I don't know what I'm talking about. What's going on?
Well, so Saturday I'm starting my show on the Republic Broadcasting Network, which is, I believe, on some frequency somewhere in the 90s in this town, maybe?
But we can't say.
And, so anyway, yeah, it'll be on from Saturday from 3 to 5, so surf around, you'll find it.
Oh, yeah, you will find it, because you'll hear, there's nothing really like it. There hasn't been anything like it since the last things we couldn't really talk about.
Right.
All right. All right, tell us, we'll skip all the espionage end of this, and we'll go right to the heart of the matter. I first have to say that the news and views expressed here are not those of Texas Educational Broadcasting, but are strictly those of the producer and her guests. Her guest in this case is the one and the only Scott Horton, who will be on the air Saturday from 3 to 5 in a super secret place. She's going to be looking, look. All right. This is an interesting gig for you, too. Tell me a little more about it.
I think this will be the first time that I'm doing radio with a predominantly culturally conservative, perhaps very, very, very conservative audience. And I'm, you know, as an Austinite, I'm really used to arguing with left-wingers about why liberty is the best answer. So I'm really looking forward to arguing with right-wingers about why they ought to not be collectivists.
Particularly on cultural issues they just shouldn't get themselves involved in.
Sure, I mean, it's like libertarians always say, what exactly is the difference between socialism and national socialism? Is it just like a cultural point of view, but the exact same program, or what?
Basically. So you're going to hit hard some interesting issues, including...
Well, predominantly we're going to be talking about the war and the police state related to that war here at home. The show's mostly going to be about foreign policy. In fact, I hope to skip most of the social issues. If the callers really bring them up and want me to talk about them, then I will. But I think that you look at the dangers in things like George Bush's recently proposed new intelligence czar, which is Russian for Caesar. And you look at the Department of Homeland Security, Patriot Acts 1 and 2, and the Victory Act, and all the rest of the consolidation of federal police power going on. And you can't end any of that while you're at war. As long as they can go on TV and say, this is wartime, everybody, then that's a blank check to do whatever they want. So first we have to stop the intervention in other nations' affairs, and then we can effectively repeal the police state that they've created for us here in America.
Well, we're living under a constant state of terror. Every day is something new. There'll be something like, okay, there's a terror alert for Kansas. A farmhouse in Kansas, right? Al-Qaeda tells us there's new intelligence that a farmhouse in Kansas might...
My favorite one was a school somewhere in Texas. Yeah. That was the good one. I like that.
Yeah. Do you think Tom Ridge is yanking our chain?
Well, you know, it seems... Like, their spin on it is that, well, hey, if we get any intelligence, we have to let you know or else you'll be mad at us for not telling you. But at the same time, every time that they come out with one of these alerts, it turns out later on that this was bogus info, and they knew it was bogus in the first place. So, you know, like the thing the other day where they got cops with M16 standing out in front of Citibank and all over D.C., New York City, and Newark, New Jersey, and it turned out it was based on information that was 4 years old. There was no kind of immediate threat that they needed to deploy cops with M16s for. But it makes good PR, and I guess somehow people think that if the more danger they're in, the more they ought to vote Republican, and it seems to work pretty well. I'm not exactly sure what's the dynamic there, but...
And the more they don't want to work for a living, they vote for...
Democrats,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah. It's really a racket. It's a one-team racket, basically.
Well, and this is really my problem, because I don't want to work for a living, but I'm a libertarian, so I can't justify forcing other people through government to pay my way for me, which means basically I live hand-to-mouth.
actually, you are an entrepreneur. Why don't you tell them the truth? You have a business.
Oh, can I talk about that?
You can talk about the business. You just can't tell them to buy anything.
I'm not suggesting anybody buy anything, but I suggest that you go and look at thebumpersticker.com, and there's about 300-something anti-government slogans up there for you to fight the man on the back of your car.
These are stickers unlike any other. My favorite so far is the... Which one did you? They gave me the real sweet one about John Kerry.
The John Kerry just as dumb as Bush.
Yes, yeah, that was a very good one.
My favorite John Kerry one is I committed atrocities, John Kerry, and also there's John Kerry a little bit less evil maybe. Anyway, that's at thebumpersticker.com. I don't suggest anything except looking at it and making your own decisions from there, I guess. Is this because of government?
Well, let me explain. This is a FCC rule. This is not actually a co-op rule. This is something I explained to guests because guests are kind of baffled. And, you know, is it, how do you raise funds this way? It's a very interesting thing. Pledge drive around here is always a semantic nightmare. But we can't do something that's called calls to action. And that's whether you can't tell someone to vote for Ron Paul, or you can't tell someone to, you know, go on down and listen to Echo Base tonight. You know, where Nick is playing in his band. You can't tell them to do anything.
But you can't say Ron Paul's running for re-election and Echo Base is playing.
That's right.
Okay.
Okay, so that's...
And thebumpersticker.com is a website.
That's right. You can say that. So if there are rules, then, you know, a co-op labors under the FCC. It's the oppressive FCC. And you and I, years ago, and we can't get into too many details here, obviously, because I don't want Lloyd Perry breaking down the door, but several years ago, you and I worked on a project where we tried to openly fight the oppressive arm of the Federal Communications Commission, and unfortunately ended up in a hail of bullets, I believe, and Pokey Ritter hitting someone. That's great. That would
we all got shot. It was a bloody mess.
It was a mess. Actually, though, we met years ago on a project that I get very nostalgic about every now and then. I get misty-eyed when I have my protein shake, and I kick back, and I think, God, that was probably one of the most important acts of civil disobedience I will have ever participate in. And it was not literally civil disobedience, so if you understand it, but that was rebuild the church.
Yeah, well, and, you know, I'm not a religious type myself, and in fact, probably David Koresh's version of Christianity is a, you know, a pretty silly thing to me. So I didn't rebuild that church in order, you know, as devotion to their religion or anything like that. It was a simple matter of sending a message to the state that there's a spirit of resistance out here, and maybe we didn't get there in time to stop them from burning it down, but at least we rebuilt it, and it's not going to be so easy for them to burn it down next time.
That's right. We, back in 99 and 2000, several people here from Austin, atheists, punkers, a few lesbians, interesting, it was an eclectic group of people, none of whom were actually Branch Davidians, and very few were actually religious, went and rebuilt a chapel for the elderly Davidians who live in Waco and had no place to worship on Saturdays.
And built it directly on the spot where the previous chapel had been, in their old compound. And by the way, I should say, I didn't do that much. I mean, I worked on it some, and I nailed some boards and filled in some concrete, but I'm not taking credit for it.
I
did a very minimal part in that project.
Took pictures. My former co-host did some. A lot of different people did a lot of nails. Various buddies of yours. It was great. It was a great thing to do, and I'm still proud to be a part of that.
Me too.
But all right, that's actually the FCC coming to get us as we speak. All right, I'm going to go here quickly to a promotional for India Day here at Co-op, and we'll be right back. This is Liberated Space. I'm Angela Keaton. My guest is Scott Hort, and you're listening to 91.7 KOOP. And we are back. You've re-entered the Liberated Space. I'm Angela Keaton. Scott Horton is making a triumphant radio comeback this Saturday from 3 to 5 on a mystery station. Anyway, Scott, who is going to be on the show this week?
Well, actually, it's not definitely set, but I'm pretty sure that I'm going to interview Jim Loeb again, who I interviewed on some previous show. You could listen to the archive of at philipdrew.com. One L in Philip and D-R-U for Drew, philipdrew.com. Anyway, I've interviewed Jim Loeb before, and I want to bring him on again. He's one of the world's foremost experts on the cult of the neoconservatives, and those are the former Trotskyites and Straussians who basically became right-wing warmongers during the Reagan years and pushed this invade Iraq policy. And Jim Loeb is the Washington, D.C. correspondent for the Interpress Service and has just written for really going back all the way since Wolfowitz got fired from the first Bush administration for his America Ought to Take Over the World paper. Loeb has been writing about the cult of the neocons ever since then. And this is something that's very interesting to me because, you know, I look at the history of the 20th century and I see basically the Rockefeller set, the people surrounding the Rockefeller banks and industries, and particularly through the Council on Foreign Relations, controlling, you know, pretty much all of our policy. And now a lot of these neocons are members of the CFR, but they seem to be quite a bit at odds. And it seems like I guess if you think of Colin Powell, he's like the typical Rockefeller Republican, typical what they call realist in foreign policy. And it's really interesting to me the way Richard Perle and Paul Wolfowitz and all these crazy ex-communists wrestled control away from the Rockefellers, at least temporarily, in order to push their agenda, which, it's kind of funny, might have actually helped in a way. The UN was getting so much stronger and stronger every year during the Clinton years. And, you know, I think Richard Perle has really kicked it in the gut. I don't know if it's really ever, now maybe its replacement might be a terrible tyranny, but I doubt that the UN is in any position to come to actual world government status for quite some time now. I think America's really screwed that up for them.
It's very good you're bringing this up because many, many people here, including many people in the co-op listening audience, like to talk about the blood for oil aspect of this war, not realizing that there's a larger ideological motivation that may not have as much to do with oil as we think. Neoconservatism has a long history in this country. When I was in graduate school, I was shocked. I used to think neoconservative was a slur that, you know, paleo-libertarians and anarcho-capitalists used against conservatives who had broken away. But no, they described the William Buckley as being our foremost neoconservative. And if you think about National Review and the influence that magazine has had over, well, you think about it, it's very, very subtle, but throughout the years, not the cultural parts of the agenda, not the anti-abortion part, but the foreign policy part of the agenda has completely taken over the way we think.
Well, you know, I'm not sure that I would even, which I don't go back that far in terms of my knowledge of the different factions and that kind of thing, but I'm not sure if I really even consider Buckley, National Review now, obviously, is head to the toe, you know, top to bottom neoconservatives. I'm not sure if I would count Buckley in there. I tend to think of Buckley as just plain old conservative without a prefix. And these neocons are basically, they're all a bunch of ex-communists. Yes. They're all a bunch of people who, if you remember, the split between Stalin and Trotsky was that Trotsky and his followers hated Stalin because Stalin was a quitter. Not because he was a monster who killed 40 million people, but because he wasn't willing to take over the entire world with brute force. And in Trotsky's view, quite correctly, communism can't survive while there's any free nation anywhere else to serve as an example to them. And so it had to be a permanent revolution of the whole world. And these Trotskyites took the American side during the Cold War because they were so anti-Soviet, but it wasn't because they were pro-American, it was because they were so pro-Soviet. And then they all grew up and became Reaganites, and you know, Bush Sr. kept these guys in check. Bush Sr. much more followed like the Colin Powell view of the world, and that's what his New World Order was about, you know, through the United Nations. But Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld forged their alliances, which they're, I would call, again, no prefix, just plain old kind of right-wing conservatives. And they forged their ties with these neocons, and Cheney put them in all the top positions, especially in the Pentagon, put John Bolton and Richard Armitage in the State Department to keep Colin Powell on a leash, and they're the ones who pushed this Iraq war. And it was James Baker and Brent Scowcroft. Those are the oil men. You talk about war for oil, James Baker is Baker Botts. He represents the Saudis. He is the oil man. And they were against it. Even Henry Kissinger came out, you know, not completely against it, but at least saying, hey, you know, wait a minute. And that's a pretty big clue that this is not about oil, because we all know that Kissinger was Nelson Rockefeller's man. He has always been the Rockefeller man. And seems like the oil guys were really against this. The ideology, the pro-Israel and the just blatantly American empire ideology of the neoconservatives completely trumped the oil interest. Oil is a lot cheaper to buy than it is to go bomb and take over and all that.
What is the ideology of the American empire? What are the goals here?
I think it's really just power for power's sake, with democracy as the public relations. You know, that we have to, and it's also very much loyalty to Israel. A lot of the neoconservatives are Jews, not all of them, and a lot of their families have, or a lot of their families died in the Holocaust, and they have this whole never again, we must have total dominant force over the world to prevent terrible things from happening. Now, the fact that they're the ones carrying out the terrible things is completely beyond them, apparently.
That's the funny thing about human nature now, isn't it?
Right, and you know, they say the weakness. I heard someone last night, someone who I wouldn't necessarily call a neocon, but someone parroting their line, say to the question, well, what if we just got out of the Middle East and brought all our troops home? You think that would help? And she said, no, that just betrays weakness, because remember when Reagan pulled out of Beirut, and that made us look weak, and it inspired them to hit us again. Well, it just misses the point that, you know, history didn't begin on the day that that truck bomb went off in Beirut and killed those Marines. History began the day that American Marines landed in Beirut and made themselves a target, you know. So for her to say that, you know, weakness makes us more likely to be victimized, it depends on the situation. You know, if you go and poke your stick in a hornet's nest and they come after you, it's, you know, backing off is not necessarily giving ground to the hornets, you know what I mean?
Who would you look to for leadership in foreign policy, a correct foreign policy?
Oh, like, say, if I was president, I would make David Thoreau over at the Independent Institute my Secretary of State.
Who is doing some of the best writing and the best thinking on foreign policy?
I look at antiwar.com every morning. They have all the news headlines, and Justin Raimondo and Alan Bach and Matthew Barganier and really the rest of them, too, that write really great stuff, full of links. Justin Raimondo writes three times a week on antiwar.com. Indispensable, man. I wouldn't know a damn thing about the neocons. I think, really, in fact, the fact that people understand that they've heard the word neoconservative, that's due in great part to Justin Raimondo and antiwar.com, I think, for pushing that, for getting people to understand the differences, the splits in ideology within the administration and such.
When we were in Atlanta with all of our friends, something that, you know, libertarians have all their little bickering thing, but the one issue that they absolutely seem to be obsessed with is the war. How, and let's say if you were giving Michael Badnarik advice, how would you tell him to approach the war issue?
Well, just in a general sense, I would say that the reason we have a problem with these terrorists is because of our interventions in the past. I mean, it's not even really in dispute for anyone who can read besides just, you know, watching Fox News or something. We've provoked this, and we have a problem with it. Now, September 11th was a terrible thing. What a libertarian president would have done, I believe, is he would have probably fired the Delta Force and then rehired them as contractors and told them, here's a list of, say, 24 individuals who we hold responsible in the highest levels of Al-Qaeda. Kill them and bring us proof that it's them that you killed, and you don't get paid until you prove who it was, and you have a simple retribution against actual individual human beings, and not go and overthrow the Taliban, conflate Al-Qaeda with the Taliban, and conflate Afghanistan with Iraq, and then name an axis of evil and just go completely nuts. What you do is you kill the people responsible, and then you tell the world, hey, look, see, we're the light of liberty. There's no reason to be attacking us. We're not force. We're nothing that you need to have revenge against. This most terrible thing in the world happened. You know we got a $500 billion military. We can kill any of y'all we want, but we're not gonna. We're gonna send our special forces. We're gonna kill a couple of dozen guys who deserve it, and then we're coming home. And I mean, that would be the ultimate proof. And if you look at the attitude around the world on September 12th, even in, you know, the Gaza Strip, they were saying, "Geez, man, that's maybe going a little too far there. Those Americans, they're not that bad." You know, I mean, we had the opportunity. I hate to say it that way, but it was a wonderful PR opportunity for America to prove what a benevolent place it is and prove that they had no real excuse to do something like that to us. And instead, we've basically gone and tried our best to prove them justified after the fact by saying, oh, you want empire? You're going to fight against empire? We'll show you empire. And we just make it worse. Every person we kill, we create 4 more terrorists. So even Donald Rumsfeld said it's a long, hard slog, and we don't have any way of doing the math to know whether we're winning or not. Well, obviously we're not. You kill some guy in front of his kids are going to grow up and be suicide bombers, and they don't have an army to join. So they're going to kill civilians here. They're going to act as terrorists because there's no Navy or Air Force for them to join up to fight us with. It's as simple as that. The way to beat terrorism is to not deserve it.
This September 11th, though, did prove a wonderful opportunity for people, though, who were looking for ways to get a little more control over the average American. It just works out that way. These things happen, and those who want power know how to seize opportunities. Things have changed in this country. Before September 11th, of course, we were always somewhat edgy about encroachments on our freedoms, whether it's with asset forfeiture, the war on drugs, and the related, you know, the police state. But now, we are now psychologically living under a constant state of terror. And it is affecting us.
I sometimes forget that because it doesn't work on me. So when they give their phony terror alert, I'm just not scared. So it's hard for me to relate. I remember I opened a Newsweek that had pictures of people in the local Home Depot getting their plastic sheeting and duct tape whenever they said that, beware, get sheeting and duct tape to protect yourself from chemical attack. And there's a, you know, 2-page picture in Newsweek of these, you know, rich, white, educated people on the East Coast in an absolute state of terror with their arms just full of duct tape and plastic sheeting. It's like just a joke to me, and yet they believe it so much that, you know, if your point is as long as they're afraid they'll do what they're told, you're right. I mean, that's really the deal. Unless they believe that they can take care of themselves, protect themselves, and live their own life, then they're going to turn to somebody else to live it for them. And unfortunately, that person now is Tom Ridge, who's the boss of 300,000 federal cops. And if that makes you feel safe, then I might be able to arrange to sell you some swampland in southern Florida. You know, if you really are that gullible, then maybe I can make some money off you. I don't know.
You and I spoke a few weeks ago at the LCRA, where the Travis County Libertarian Party has its monthly speaking engagements, talking about the issue of gay marriage. And we're trying to explain this to Randall, because people I don't think on the outside understand our positions. And I'm going to use this to draw a larger position on what liberty is. But explain our position on gay marriage, because I don't think most people are really kind of wrapping their heads around this one.
Well, my question to Randall, and he's from what again? What's it called?
The LGRL. It's the Lesbian Gay Rights Lobby.
Okay. Well, my question to Randall was, instead of saying we want marriage, it goes back to the whole Harry Brown maxim, which is you don't solve a problem of government by piling more government on top of it. And so instead of asking government for permission to get married, what they ought to be doing is petitioning for government to get out of the marriage business altogether and treat marriage and civil contracts between individuals as totally separate and distinct things. So you can go have your marriage ceremony wherever your religion fits, or in your backyard or at your Wicca thing or whatever it is, and then you go down to the office and, I don't know, sign a contract in front of a bureaucrat giving each other whatever power of attorney or however, you know, all the different things that a marriage license entails now, but just don't call it marriage. And that's really the best way to appease the right, who are so against it, because they don't want their sacred, you know, holy kind of idea of marriage being applied to something that they see is not biblical. So the whole point is, the state isn't biblical either. And in fact, marriage licenses were invented because it was illegal for a white person to marry a black person unless you had a license. That's where that came from in the first place. Think of that movie, The Patriot, the Mel Gibson's like a Braveheart only in South Carolina. And he says that there's a scene where there's a wedding, and the preacher says, "Now, by the power vested in me by you, I now pronounce you man and wife." And I just thought, oh, great, man, he didn't need the state of the colony of South Carolina to give him that permission. He's a preacher, they're human beings, they're both over 18. Let them sign their contract and do their thing and leave religion out of the law entirely.
And leave the law out of our lives.
Yeah, and then he said that, huh, let me think about that. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's our way of, let's say, I guess our way of lighting the hearts of liberty one heart, is it lighting the fires of liberty one heart at a time?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, no, it was kind of exciting in Atlanta. I think it just showed just how alive the party can be with that much competition and that much of a horse race, to see Austin's own Michael Badnarik, you know, basically boot the
There is race. A website called badnarik.org.
Yeah,
I can't really suggest anybody do anything about that, but spelled B-A-D-N-A-R-I-K, and he is the Libertarian candidate for President of the United States right now. And by the way, I'm on co-op, and I know that if anybody's listening anymore, they're all a bunch of left-wingers. If you people want to hurt George Bush, support Michael Badnarik, man. Give him money so that he can get his name out in front of more conservatives, because there's a lot of anti-war Republicans who are very against the Iraq war, but they can't stomach voting for Kerry because he's a communist. And so, you know, give him someone who's against the war and who wants to abolish the IRS at the same time, and help get his name out in front of the disgruntled right.
All right. Okay. Now that, all right. Well, one more time.
Wasn't a call to action.
That was not a call to action.
I just meant, if you determine to do something about that, it might,
if you haven't been thinking about this later, when a lot of the people in this audience are obviously who were, you know, mostly drinking beer and smoking pot in the evening, and this is Thursday in Austin, what the hell else do we expect you to be doing? It's the first Thursday and all that kind of nonsense. Think about this conversation. You might think about this conversation later and those thoughts might occur to you. All right, Scott, one more time, tell us where and when about the show before we sign out of here.
Well, my website is philipdrew.com, and that's one L in Philip and D-R-U for Drew. There's about 100 interviews up there, mostly about foreign policy and the Patriot Act and stuff like that, some other things mixed in. And my new show will be Saturdays from 3 to 5 on 90-something-something-something on the FM dial here in Austin.
All right. Still trying to get even with Lloyd Perry every step of the way, baby. All right. Because the FCC controls your brainwaves, co-op now concludes broadcast day.